Covenant at Sinai, Commentary for the May 15, 2021 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. Remember, Exodus 20, verse 8a. Slavery has had a troubling centuries-long existence in North America, predating the American Revolution and the establishment of the United States. Some date its beginning here back to 1619 in Jamestown, Virginia, 400 years ago. It is not hard to see the parallel between this period and the four centuries of enslavement of the Israelites in Egypt prior to the Exodus. For this reason, those who are still unsympathetic to the black plight in America prefer to date slavery as only running to the ratification of the 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution in 1865. They realize how powerful the biblical metaphor can be in inspiring an oppressed people. Many references can be found to the Exodus experience of the Israelites in abolitionist literature and in speeches, articles, and artwork of the continuing struggle by blacks looking to undo the stigma associated with the color of their skin. Unlike the Jews after World War II, who could shed the yellow stars that they wore under the Nazis, skin color could not be erased or forgotten. Those who want to say that slavery ended in 1865 are likely without experience of what the stigma of a black skin could mean in post-slavery America. Perhaps they are unaware of the rounding up of so-called indigent blacks for the local sheriff to lease out to local farms and businesses to do the same work they did under slavery for the same wages, nothing, that they had under slavery. Perhaps they are also unaware of the Jim Crow laws that prohibited blacks from having equal access to the same liberties that whites always enjoyed. They could not eat at the same restaurants. They could not buy gas at the same gas stations. They could not be admitted to the same hospitals. Even what should be the most inclusive event in a professedly Christian nation, the worship hour, has been often segregated. Christian universities and colleges segregated their cafeterias. A white church in our own denomination has refused a black pastor as recently as in the past decade, within only a few miles of where I live in the Pacific Northwest, for fear of becoming known as a black church. While I doubt this was openly said, a leading family in the church shared with me that the conference had offered them a well-qualified black pastor, and the church had been discussing how to prevent it from happening. The person who called me about the issue said that their family agreed with those refusing the pastor. I did not agree, but was not a member of that local church and had no vote or voice in the pastoral selection process. In the end, he was officially rejected as a candidate by that church. As many blacks have said for so long, racism is not overt, but takes place in hidden back rooms and in discreet phone conversations away from public view and knowledge. Feminists, suffragettes, union organizers, all have known equally well with those who struggle for racial equality, how these secretive oppressions take place. Those who think slavery ended in 1865 have likely never experienced redlining of districts where black families are excluded from living when buying a home. They have probably not experienced sundown towns where blacks could be arrested or worse if they were within city limits after dark while traveling on a family vacation. They did not experience having their teenage sons murdered for daring to speak to a white woman. They did not see their adult sons return from fighting in World War I, expecting to enjoy the civil rights they had fought to preserve, only to be lynched by the score to appease white fears of uppity blacks. They have also not experienced having an entire community destroyed, as blacks experienced with the Tulsa Massacre of 1921. Sometimes I experience a little animosity from blacks because of my white skin. I do not like it. It makes me feel uneasy. But I understand completely, based on what so many of them have been through for no other reason and being black. I bear a racial shame for how whites have treated blacks. I also bear a denominational shame for my denomination's embracement of Jim Crow by creating separate but equal regional conferences. This misstep created a wound that seems almost impossible to heal today. The denomination missed an excellent chance to heal in 1954 had they embraced Brown versus the Board of Education as willingly as they had Plessy versus Ferguson. We would be much further along than we are on the road to racial reconciliation. However, if church members continue to see the race of whoever is in charge as making a church, conference, union, etc., as being black or white, we will continue wandering far from the promised land, unable to enter in. Long ago, God created man and offered him an Edenic paradise if mankind would trust him enough to believe and follow what God taught him. But the trust was broken, and like Cain and Abel, those who did not want to live in relationship with God too often mistreated or killed those that did. The evil became so profuse that it could not be allowed to continue and still expect anyone godly to survive. God then called Noah and his family to preserve the godly line in an ark that would pass through the deluge to come. But even beginning again with Noah's family, things went astray shortly after, with Noah cursing one of his sons and his descendants. God tried again with Abraham, but his descendants fumbled the ball and ended up enslaved in Egypt for 4 centuries. Eventually, God called Moses to free them. The dramatic story preserved in the book of Exodus has served as an inspiration for anyone struggling against oppression. The idea that freedom is possible is a theme that resonates and calls each of us to God, not only for spiritual redemption, but for physical liberation too. For this reason, we often see Moses as a messianic figure, breaking the chains of slavery and setting people free. Just like those ancient Israelites, we yearn to be free and rejoice at the opportunity. We demand the freedoms not yet realized. We focus on all the loss that our enslaved past has left us with. We struggle to cross the Red Sea over the Pettus Bridge of civil rights. We are convinced of the righteousness of it all, and rightfully so. God created each of us to be free to become everything He created us to be. But what does that really mean? When a teenager first gets their driver's license, they rarely think beyond the freedom they now have to travel where they wish. They have little understanding of the decades of automobile fueling, maintenance, and insurance expenses to come. Although each must pass an exam for ability and another for understanding the rules of the road, for too many, everything goes in one ear and out the other because they are under the enchantment of the open road. This is shown in the fact that most become familiar with the traffic citation that reins in some of that freedom and romance. They learn that freedom is not so much an escape from what they experienced before as a call to a new responsibility they had not known. It is pretty much the same in every case involving freedom. When Moses led the Israelites to freedom from Egypt, it was not simply so they could run and play in the wilderness, even though they spent 40 years there. It was to enter the Promised Land, where they were to be God's priestly example to the rest of the world, ministering to nations, tribes, and individuals the grace of God's compassionate love. In this they failed. Instead of reaching out with compassion and love, they walled themselves in with suspicion and hatred of the other. When Jesus traveled through Samaria, he tried to teach his disciples about the welcoming inclusiveness that God desires. It is a founding principle of his kingdom. Philip baptizing the Ethiopian eunuch and Peter's baptism of the Roman centurion and his family show that the idea caught on for a while. But as Paul discovered, soon after Jesus' ascension, some wanted the walls back up, pushing for things like circumcision and eating separate from Gentiles, things that exclude and divide. By the 4th century, with the power of the state to enforce its will, The church ironically excluded the kinds of people often responsible for its early existence and growth, the Jews and women. They forbade the keeping of the Sabbath, kept for millennia on the day now called Saturday, and they forbade the ordaining of women, in a refusal to see them as equally called to the priesthood. The Christian church went from serving everyone to controlling everything, as it often does today. Our Black brothers and sisters have the precious opportunity to set us back on the right path, if they are willing, and we are willing to listen. It is not enough to simply escape slavery in all its insidious forms. When God calls us out of something terrible, he calls us because he has a purpose in mind. That purpose is usually service to others. Who better to understand the needs of society than those who have been deprived of those needs for so long? When God covenants with us to be a royal priesthood, it is not to put on flowing robes and add fancy titles to our names like bishop, deacon, reverend, and all the other denominational claptrap that we affect. Instead, it is to pick up the towel and wash basin of Jesus and serve the needs of everyone, including the Judas willing to betray us. It is not to amass wealth and political power to separate society into the deserving and those who are not. In the struggle for Black liberation, may we each, regardless of race, not miss this precious opportunity to be the compassionate person God has called us to be, has freed us to be. This is what it means to be free at last. Thank you for listening to this commentary podcast. You can find others like it at our website, Stillwaters Ministry, at www.visitstillwaters.com, as well as written copies of the commentaries. May God richly bless you and your family.